Today we are talking about the power of Jesus. And the power of Jesus is something that goes beyond our human understanding. He works in ways that we don't always anticipate. Last week we talked about how we rely on God's Spirit and not human efforts. We talked about how God is building a temple out of his church and that we must be dependent on him to achieve this. It will defy logic. Jesus has the power of God. Last week, of course, we talked about by God's Spirit. This week is the power of Jesus. You might be asking, what's the difference? Isn't Jesus God? Well, yes, Jesus is God, but here's the difference. If we get so fixated on the concept of God, we may not specify what God that we worship on Sunday mornings. The church finds its identity not in the belief in God, but in God's Son, Jesus Christ. Many people believe in God, but have no access to the Spirit of God because they do not have Jesus. Jesus is the power of God, and we only have access to the Father through him. 2,000 years ago, Jesus' followers experienced a time of disappointment like no one in all of history has had to endure. Jesus was crucified, he died, and he was buried. And we know the end of the story, but his disciples were let down at that time. They thought that it was over. Now, we may not have to suffer the disappointment that our Savior had been brutally humiliated and murdered by our enemies. We do, however, experience disappointments of our own. For instance, my junior year of high school, it was my 11th year of wrestling, and leading up to that season, I was pulling out all the stops. I trained like I'd never trained before, and it was going to be my year. My sophomore year, I qualified for the district tournament. My junior year, I wanted to improve on that exponentially. So my expectations were to go undefeated during the season, qualify for state, and by the end of the state tournament, I was going to be on the podium. In fact, my words prior to the season were that I was going to win state. Those were my plans. But you know what happened? The day before Thanksgiving, it was about a week away from the first tournament we were going to have. We played a game at the end of the practice, really grueling practice. End of practice, they just announced that I was one of the team captains. They decided to play a game at the end of practice. And all it was is we had to force our opponent out of the little circle, the inner circle of the wrestling mat. So tiny circle we had to force them out of in order to win our match. And when I came up against my opponent, I brought him down to the ground, caught him in a headlock, and I was going to do what's called a gator roll. And so you kind of roll through to flip them so they go across their back. And I thought if I did this move that they would end up out of the ring and I would win the match. So I clamped down on him. I rolled my body underneath my opponent and my body went, but my ankle stayed put. It stayed stuck on the mat and we heard an audible snap. And by the time that the people on my team had moved away from me because they wanted to make sure I was okay. And I told them, I'm fine, probably just twisted my ankle. I stood up and I realized I could not stand on my own 2 feet. Long story short, I broke my ankle. Now, once I recovered, I still had a good season, but all that work, all that effort went to waste in a split second, and I would be benched in a cast for the first 6 weeks of the season. I'm very blessed to share with you that that's my story of disappointment. For those of you out there, you've had to deal with worse. Maybe it was a bad relationship with your spouse, a divorce, a miscarriage. Maybe you got a phone call in the middle of the night informing you that your loved one had been hit by a drunk driver. Maybe your son or daughter or mother or father had committed suicide. Or maybe it was a business venture that didn't go as you planned. Maybe you're betrayed by someone who promised you the world. Disappointment, no matter what mask it wears, is never attractive. And it leaves us in despair and in a heap of ashes with no hope of repair. The point I'm making is that we've all been there in one form or another. And we should never try to belittle whatever disappointment a person is going through. Yes, you may have lost a loved one, while another person merely lost a dream. But we're all on a journey. A lost dream might seem like the end of the world to somebody who invested their entire life into accomplishing a goal where they're going to only have one chance to achieve it. That's a hard pill to swallow. Not very many people have the resilience to bounce back from something like that. And you're never left from that nagging question in the back of your mind that says, how could life have been if only I had done things right? I think it's worth to think about how close this church was to going belly up. I appreciate the stories that everyone shared with me, particularly of how you could have sold the building at one point. It was one of those decisions that, regardless of what you chose, would leave you wondering how things could have been. And you chose to keep it. And as a result of that, you've been experiencing blessings here. The fact that you're growing, the fact that you're starting to see ministry going on inside of here, and that you have vision for the future even. It's an exciting time to be a part of this church. And we all know that the church itself is not the building. But let's face it, when you lose your building, it can be devastating. Memories for you and your families were created here. Without this building, those memories would still exist, but at a distance. What I love about Jesus, though, is that he loves giving dead things life. And what gives the Father more glory than his Son doing the impossible? Having said that, he also has a habit of allowing loved ones to feel the gravity of loss before he picks them up. The hopelessness that comes with the life being snuffed out all too early. Take, for instance, this story in Mark chapter 5. It's the story of Jairus and his daughter. Let's start in verse 21 and read through 24. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. Right now we have the situation. Jairus' daughter was going to die. Jairus, however, had heard about this man named Jesus, about how he'd been doing these miracles and how he might be the Messiah. And so he knew that all he had to do was to go to Jesus and he could lay his hands on her and she would be made well. But he also probably was aware that this was a time-sensitive situation. They had very little time to achieve this as she was on the brink of death, so every last second counted. And then, to his dismay, Jesus was interrupted. Yes, somebody else needed Jesus as he traveled to heal this girl. She was an outcast from society because of her ceremonial uncleanness. That wasn't her fault. It was a medical condition that she had, and all of the doctors were stumped concerning how to bring her healing. And here was Jesus, her last hope, and she wasn't going to let this opportunity to be healed go to waste. She was not going to let it slip away. So she made her move and caused Jesus the slightest moment of delay, resulting in her healing. After healing this woman, the news came that Jairus' daughter was dead. It was too late. Verse 35 says, while he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" They all thought that it was too late. And the messengers made a mistake that too many people were making back then, and I believe too many people make even today. We assume that death is the end. We assume that a missed opportunity is the end. We assume that if things don't go the way that we planned, that's the ball game, and there remains no more purpose in our life. Not Jesus. Jesus saw those situations as the best situations because these were the opportunities to demonstrate just how awesome his Father truly was. Jesus assured Jairus, "Do not fear, only believe." Easy for him to say, right? But Jesus has a better perspective on our existence than what we do. Later on in Mark's gospel in chapter 9, we stumble upon chapter 9, verse 23. The second half of verse 23 says, "All things are possible for one who believes in God." This is another fallacy of modern man with our empirical methods. We run the odds. We don't look at it as though everything is possible with God. We use words like probably, likelihood, and most likely. Now, do you hear what the words imply? They imply a sense of randomness, that if an event occurred in a certain frequency, you would arrive at it a certain outcome however many times. The great philosopher Lloyd Christmas from the movie Dumb and Dumber exercises logic when asking his beloved Mary Swanson of what the odds were for two people like them ending up together. Her answer was not good, like one in a million. Lloyd's brilliant reply, after running the odds, said, "So you're telling me there's a chance?" With God, it's not a matter of chance. It either is in the will of God or it isn't. In either case, it is not a matter of odds. It's a matter of God's sovereignty. They had Jesus at their side, so surely good things were going to happen. We pick up again in Mark 5, 41 through 43. "Taking her by the hand, he said to her, 'Talitha kumi,' which means, 'Little girl, I say to you, arise.' And immediately the girl got up and began walking," for she was 12 years old, "and they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat." 2 weeks ago, we celebrated the resurrection of Jesus. 4 weeks ago, we learned about the resurrection of Lazarus. And there are common themes of hopes being dashed as a result of tragic death. The same thing exists in the story of Jairus' daughter. She died, hope was lost, and then Jesus walked into the picture. A number of years ago, I had the opportunity to hear John C. Maxwell preach on miracles. And he taught us that the bigger the problem that faces God's people, the bigger the miracle God will give to deliver them. Death is a big problem. And Jesus delivered consistently with bringing people back from the dead. If he delivered in these three circumstances that we just listed, including the fact that Jesus Christ rose from the dead after having been crucified, what greater miracles? How much more faith? How much more can we expect from God, knowing the reality that he can bring the dead back to life? How much more should we hold on to the faith and the hope that God has bigger plans when all seems lost? We absolutely have some challenges ahead of us, but we have no reason to fear the obstacles. Last, we're reading Psalm 127, which starts off by saying, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep." This psalm does not deny that people build houses apart from the Lord. It does not deny that people watch over the city without trusting in God. The author is aware that people wake up early and go to bed late without two thoughts of the Almighty in their minds. And those things are all true. And oftentimes, people that do these things, lots of times, they end up becoming very successful and productive people. And yet, we're told it's all in vain. One day in this life or the next, no matter how much preparation you put into having money, having security, or being prepared for the end of the world, nothing will be able to save you from your own mortality. Trusting in the keeper of your soul, that's the only option. There's only one way to be plugged into this lifeline, and that is through the Son of God, Jesus Christ. He is the way and the truth and the life. When he hears the cries of his beloved, he answers. He says that we are his friends if we obey his commands. And his command is to love one another. That means starting here at Finley Grace Brethren Church, we love one another. There's nothing more beautiful than walking into a church where you sense a deep, abiding love that the people have for one another. And their affection for one another is evidence that they follow Jesus. What should we take away from this? God wants us to be obedient. He wants us to abide in the love of Jesus and to spread that love to those that we interact with. He wants us to be salt and light to the world. And if we are doing these things, he'll bring blessing. If we're doing these things, who wouldn't want to be a part of this wonderful congregation? So I'll close with this. If you want to see the blessings of Jesus in your life, there are four things you must display: faith, faithfulness, hope, and love. Faith, faithfulness, hope, and love. All things are possible with God.